The state responds to a gas blowout on the North Slope.
Everything that we required the operator to have, they had, and everything appears to be working the way it's supposed to.
From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, DNR permits a new coal mine near Healy.
There's a huge demand in China and all along the Asian, Pacific Rim.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Subsistence is a significant part of the lives of many Alaskans. If it's important to you, consider applying for a seat on your local Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. The councils provide vital information to the Federal Subsistence Board on subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing. The deadline to apply is February 17th. Call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence at fws.gov for more information. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
The state is responding to a blowout from an exploratory well on the North Slope. The Spanish company Repsol was in the early phase of drilling a well this morning when they encountered an unexpected gas kick. That means gas started flowing up the well. The state says no one was injured in the incident. Kathy Forrester is the engineering commissioner for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. She says the safety equipment did its job.
When you're drilling the surface hole in a well, you can't use a blowout preventer because there's no pipe to attach the blowout preventer to. So you have to use a diverter. And a diverter doesn't allow you to shut the well in. It just diverts flow away from the people in the rig. And this diverter did exactly what it was supposed to do.
The blowout sent about 30 to 40 barrels of drilling mud out of the well and onto the drilling platform, according to the state. Gas is still flowing from the well. Forrester says Repsol shut down the rig because the wind was blowing the gas back toward the drilling pad. Repsol is contracting with a company called Wild Well Control out of Texas that specializes in controlling blowouts. Forrester says it's not ideal that Repsol lost control of the well, but the potential for significant environmental damage is very small.
And it will have caused some raised blood pressure and some extra expenditure and some delay of time. And, in best case scenario, it will have startled a few people, made them spend a little extra money, and then they go back to work.
Forrester says it's been almost two decades since a similar accident happened on the North Slope. She says Repsol was required to complete a comprehensive shallow survey of the geology before drilling to look for potential hazards.
Our technical staff looked at it, analyzed it, I reviewed it, and our geologic commissioner looked at it as well. So it had quite a few eyes on it, and none of us identified shallow hazards. So all that shows is that you can't predict everything.
Environmental groups say that fact should convince the state to proceed cautiously into new drilling areas. Lois Epstein is Arctic Program Director for the Wilderness Society. She says the state is lucky the blowout involved gas and not oil, and the accident is a reminder that drilling wells is risky.
This is a very dirty, complex business, and because that's the reality, it's incredibly important to protect sensitive areas and not have them subject to drilling.
Epstein says if a large-scale version of the Repsol accident happened offshore in Alaska, it would be disastrous for marine life. The Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission already has a field inspector on scene. The Department of Environmental Conservation expects to have someone there tomorrow. Today marks the completion of one-third of this year's legislative session, and so far, legislators have spent most of their time identifying problems and goals and hoping they are set up to finish work at the end of 90 days. Joining us to help measure the session is APRN's Dave Donaldson in Juneau. Hi, Dave.
Hi there.
So, Dave, what's the atmosphere at the Capitol this year?
You know, there's a tired group of very busy, very frustrated people. I'm not seeing the collaboration that's usually done and between individual members and staff people, especially. You know, legislators are triple booked, having to choose between going to a committee meeting or meeting with constituents. It's not a good place to be. I'm just hoping they're taking time to be careful with what they are doing.
The two-day seminar that lawmakers had with oil industry consultant Pedro Van Meers just concluded, and he had some strong comments about the viability of the governor's oil tax plan. Dave, how do you think Van Meers' comments will impact the conversation about changing that tax plan?
Well, he seems to have solidified the Senate majority and the governor at the same time. The Senate, after the hearings or the seminar, was saying, oh boy, we're glad we didn't pass that bill the governor sent us last year. And the governor was saying, you know, he's still expecting to see his bill back on the desk for a signature because there's nothing else out there that'll work. Van Meers was presenting what he would write an ideal to him, an ideal tax regime. And taken as a great big, you know, a great big package, you know, it was a work of beauty. But it's not the sort of thing that can all be done at once. It needs to be done over a period of time. The Senate was very clear in saying they can't do it all in 1 year.
Well, it seems to me that that shouldn't be surprising. I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day. The tax structure wasn't built in one legislative session. It's been built and tinkered with over time. Does it seem surprising that it would take more than one session to sort out major changes?
No, and it should do that. And I don't think that Pedro Van Meers, I think that this is what the Senate finance people now are at least trying to do. They want to deal with certain particular issues. They want to target the immediate, really risky things that Van Meers pointed out. They take care of that, and they can point to some improvement in this production of getting more oil through the pipeline. When they can get that taken care of and at least convince the governor that, okay, some improvement is better than nothing, then I think that we'll see some results.
Well, oil taxes, of course, have emerged as the top issue, and that was expected. But there have been a couple of other issues that are getting attention this year. For example, money for schools. What's going on there?
What happened is that the pressure just went up very quickly when one of the education groups, a union representing school clerical staff and administrative staff, they released a report saying that the Senate was really underestimating how much money it was going to take to let the schools even stay at last year's level. The Senate is prepared to go with $125 per student increase this year and further increases for two more years. But this union said it's going to take $320 per student and basically cost of living for increases for the next forever. You know, and the governor, meanwhile, is saying, I don't like formulas. We can't have any formulas. So he wants to pay for more energy costs and so forth. And they are very far apart. It's a complex one.
Well, Dave, thanks for that update.
See you later.
APRN's Dave Donaldson speaking to us from Juneau. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Bethel crowns its top dog.
I have a bumblebee costume here that I'm going to dress him up in, and hopefully that'll be a win or two.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oilfield services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
A young Napakiak man has been indicted for allegedly murdering a Bethel cab driver a few weeks ago. From KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning-Barnes reports.
21-year-old Kyle Mochin of Napakiak is facing five felony counts related to the death of 54-year-old Young Suk Chong, also known as Susie. The charges include murder in the first and second degrees, robbery, tampering with physical evidence, and vehicle theft. He is also being charged with misdemeanor theft. Although Mochin was indicted Tuesday by a Bethel grand jury on all six counts, he had been in jail for nearly 2 weeks. On February 2nd, Alaska State Troopers took him into custody at a Nepakiak residence on an outstanding arrest warrant for assault charges. But he had become a prime suspect in the murder case through law enforcement interviews with people in Nepakiak and Bethel about Chong's death. Chong was last seen alive January 31st in Bethel at about 3 a.m., driving a Lexus SUV cab for taxi cab company. That morning, she never returned home from her shift. The next day, she was found dead in her cab in Nepakiak, about 15 miles downriver from Bethel, near the village dump. Chong's body and the cab were brought to Bethel for further investigation by the Alaska Bureau of Investigation, who had flown in from Anchorage. On February 4th, Chong's remains were sent to Anchorage for an autopsy, which was completed on the 7th. According to troopers, investigators continued to develop the case while Mochin remained in jail on the other charges. They say they received considerable support and information from people in Bethel and Nepakiak in identifying Mochin as a single suspect. 8 search warrants were served in both communities. Mochin is still being held at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Correctional Center in Bethel, but his bail has jumped from $5,000 to $500,000. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
The State Department of Natural Resources has granted Usabelli a permit for a new coal mine in the Healy area. The Jumbo Dome Mine site is on leased state land near where the company has long operated its Two Bull Ridge Mine. Usabelli Vice President of Planning Keith Walters says the company needs more resource to ensure production capacity beyond Two Bull Ridge.
Even though we've got, you know, there's 15 or 20 years left in that mine, we need to ensure that our customers have got coal after that.
Usabelli currently sells about 1 million tons of coal annually to power plants in the interior and exports another 1 million tons to Korea, Chile, and Japan. Walter says the added production capacity provided by Jumbo Dome could provide for expanded export.
Chile, Korea, and Japan can expand. They can take more coal. And there's also a huge demand in China and all along the Asian, you know, Pacific Rim.
Walter says no deals have been made to sell additional coal. The DNR permit covers extraction of up to 3 million tons of coal per year over 30 years from the 3,200-acre site northeast of Healy. Additional federal and state permits are still pending. DNR Coal Program Manager Russell Kirkham says the primary environmental concern with an open pit mine is runoff.
The biggest issue with surface mining is usually sediment discharge, water quality issues. So sediment ponds are designed to contain any kind of runoff from the mine. So the first phase of the project would be to put the sediment control measures in place.
Several environmental groups provided comments on the recently granted DNR permit. The Fairbanks-based Northern Alaska Environmental Center signed in support of the comments written by the environmental law firm Trustees for Alaska. Pete Dronkers is the center's mining expert.
Seems like the Parnell administration is kind of on a path to streamline the permitting process, and this might be what we're, you know, looking at in the long term here when we look at permit streamlining or so-called streamlining efforts. Trustees was able to point out some pretty technical and important things on the DNR permit that definitely need to be addressed.
The state has responded to all the environmental groups' comments. Dronker says the groups can ask for a review hearing. He says he does not expect any legal action, but broader concerns about coal will remain.
I don't see any litigation coming down the pipe right now, but it is so important to stress again and again that coal is not our future. And there are much better and cleaner ways to get electricity. It's just a dying industry.
Dronker says the groups favor investment in fossil fuel alternatives like wind energy. Golden Valley Electric, a big Healy coal consumer, is pursuing its own major wind generation project near Healy. But Dronker says private wind power projects in Delta Junction and Fire Island near Anchorage should also be pursued to help wean the interior off coal dependence. Legislation allowing geoduck farming to expand north and west is moving in the state Senate. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The measure would allow the large, valuable clams to be grown north of their natural realm. That ends around Juneau. It would permit geoduck farms in Yakutat, Prince William Sound, Kodiak, and other locations. Kachemak Bay is exempt because it's been designated a critical habitat area.
House Bill 60 works on trying to promote economic development around the coast of Alaska.
Homer Republican Representative Paul Seaton, the main sponsor, described the measure to the Senate Natural Resources Committee on Monday.
It is very difficult to get a new economic base in many coastal towns, especially those that will not conflict in time with salmon and herring fishing.
A version of the bill introduced 5 years ago raised concerns among some biologists and lawmakers. They worried the large clams could become an invasive species, competing with other shellfish and ocean life. But Seaton says geoducks will not spread outside farm areas.
And the probability is that since the water has to be warmer before they will spawn, that they'll be just like oysters up in Kachemak Bay, where they never reach a temperature to spawn. And so we're not talking about a proliferation of the species.
The stationary filter feeders are farmed in subtidal areas. Larvae from a hatchery in Seward are planted in the ocean floor and feed on their own. They need about 7 years to mature and could take longer in colder waters. Southeast farmers recently began selling geoducks on the open market. They're taking advantage of prices of more than $20 a pound. Larger farms raise and sell geoducks in British Columbia and Washington State. Paul Foos of Sea Farms Alaska wants the same thing to happen along the Gulf.
If you pass this, it's not going to be a wasted effort. We would go immediately to a research permit, go in and get some in the ground and see how they grow, mortalities and things like that. We don't have any experience with it yet, but they're growing in Resurrection Bay water right now from the hatchery. That's what's the water that's taken in to grow them in. So I don't see any reason why that shouldn't work.
Seaton's bill made it out of the House last year, but was not heard in the Senate until Monday's meeting. After hearing about the bill, the Resources panel moved it on to the Chamber's Finance Committee. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by Providence Health and Services Alaska and North Rim Bank.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
If you've traveled in the southwest part of the state, you've almost certainly flown on one of Pennair's turboprops. But as of this week, the distinctive plane can be spotted in places a little more tropical than Alaska. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
Cold Bay is an ordinary refueling point for Pennair flights. Their planes leave from Anchorage, touch down on the Alaska Peninsula, and then usually continue on to the Aleutian or Pribilof Islands. But this weekend, one of those planes took a big turn south. Instead of traveling to Unalaska, Pennair Flight 364 went all the way down to Hawaii.
It was pretty exciting. You don't see a Saab turboprop going all the way from Anchorage, Alaska to Honolulu very often.
That's Melissa Anderson, the company's vice president of sales and marketing. According to her, the pilot wasn't going rogue or trying to sneak down to warmer climes for a break from Alaska's cold winter. Pennair was actually ferrying the Saab 340 as part of a contract with a Hawaii-based airline. The plane will spend the next 10 months bouncing around the archipelago as a temporary member of Island Air's fleet. In the meantime, Pennair is working on getting a replacement plane for its own fleet within the next 2 months. Anderson says that leasing the plane to an airline in need was good business for Pennair, and that the company does not anticipate any disruptions to service in Alaska.
It's not going to do anything. The really perfect sort of marriage with this wet lease is that it allowed us to actually take an aircraft and lease it out to somebody during our slow period. So we've made it through A season. February is typically a really quiet month for us, so we were able to actually lease it out to these folks, Island Air in Hawaii, during that slow season. And then in April, we'll bring on another one to replace it.
This is the first time that Pennair has ever done anything like this. While their turboprops travel to states like North Carolina and Tennessee for regular maintenance, they get to make a number of refueling stops along the way. To get the 30-person plane down to Hawaii, they had to work with an outside contractor who set up the plane so that it could refuel in midair.
He came in with some bladders that they placed inside the aircraft. Those bladders held excess fuel. And then they actually ran some tubing out onto the fuel tanks of the aircraft so that they could refuel the aircraft as they were moving along south headed to the Hawaiian Islands.
The trip took 10 hours, and there was no escort. When Flight 364 landed in Honolulu, it still had about 2,000 pounds of fuel left to burn. The plane is expected to return from Hawaii by next January, just in time for Penn Air's busiest season. In Unalaska, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
As the 2012 Yukon Quest winds down, some mushers are reflecting on a race that never really materialized for them. KUAC's Emily Schwing reports from Whitehorse.
Third and fourth place finishers Lance Mackey and Jake Berkowitz spoke loud and often about competing against each other in this year's race. But by the time Mackey had crossed the finish line, he said he'd all but forgotten his closest competitor.
It was nice and comforting to know that I didn't have to keep looking over my shoulders all night for his headlight. But occasionally I found myself looking anyway.
And Berkowitz traded racing for dog care over the last 177 miles of trail.
You just got to do what's right by the dogs. I wasn't willing to cut rest back at CarMax just to go chase Lance, and it turned out to be a good thing because these were two long runs. The dogs are all on their feet. They're all eating, so I feel perfectly happy. I don't even know how far ahead Lance finished from us.
After finishing, Berkowitz said he wasn't surprised he and Mackey had run close races.
In the last 2 years of racing, we've always finished back-to-back in any race we've been into.
Berkowitz held on to his fourth place standing for half the race. He's not the only musher to maintain their place. Brent Sass raced in fifth place for nearly 600 miles. But Sass says he'd have preferred that his race turn out differently.
Well, of course I wanted to win, you know. We do this to win. It's absolutely amazing to come in here. Fifth place, I've been in fifth place before, and it's nice to say I was in the top five. And, you know, next year I'll come to the race saying I'm going to win it. And the next year I'll say I'm going to win it. And one of these years I'm going
to
win it.
He says he set a goal to focus more on dog care this year. He ran with a complete team for half the race, but changing conditions forced him to drop dogs.
The dog race throws all sorts of obstacles at you, and some dogs just got tired, and it would have been doing them a harm to keep them in the team, and so it was better for me and the rest of the dogs in the team that we dropped them. You know, I don't like dropping dogs, and it was amazing coming into Dawson with 14 dogs. I made it all the way to Pelly with 14 dogs, and that was awesome. It was a first for me. But there came a time when some dogs needed to go, and so they got dropped.
Sixth and seventh place finishers Sonny Lindner and Your Life Seth Olsom were also consistent in maintaining their places. Olsom, from Norway, had never run his dogs more than about 400 miles before the quest. He hadn't planned on racing as much as he had wanted to experience the trail. But 200 miles in, he realized his team might be competitive.
I guess when I got to circle, I started to realize that I was moving pretty good compared to the guys in front of me, so then I just started running.
Olsom overtook Lindner just outside the finish line to claim sixth place.
No, it was a very good run, and I caught up to Sunday and passed him on the river. No, I asked how it was, and he was good.
The only time I saw him was coming under the bridge out here.
That's Sonny Lindner.
And then I just stopped because we were on all this side hill river stuff, and I had to get here with each dog standing up in harness. I just stopped and helped him go by. And
Lindner was down to six dogs after a few days of warmer than normal temperatures. He decided not to race.
It's been a long day. I was kind of on my minimum dog number run, so you have to kind of step up and do a bunch of the work yourself.
Sonny Lindner has said this will be his last quest, but he hasn't made any permanent decisions to that end. A handful of teams remain on the trail, some racing, some just in it for the experience. Reporting on the Yukon Quest Trail in Whitehorse, I'm Emily Schwing.
In Bethel, the event, simply known as the Dog Show, was held at the Bethel Cultural Center. Canines of every shape, size, and breed trotted in, hoping to take home a winning ribbon or two. KYUK's Mark Earhart has more.
The Bethel Dog Show drew a sizable crowd and plenty of oohs and ahs for the animals. Some were cute, some were large, and some were talented. But which dog had the special blend of adorableness and obedience to win one of the show's 17 categories?
This is Felonious. Felon Felonious. And this is his second year entering the Dog Show. Last year he won the Best Tail Wagger contest, and we're hoping to repeat in that category.
That's John Rogan, whose dachshund's tail was in prime form, wagging back and forth with the precision of a metronome.
I have a Bumblebee costume here that I am going to dress him up in, and hopefully that'll be a win or two.
Like most dogs, Felonious was entered in multiple categories, ranging from best costume to best vocal performance to the top prize, best in show. Seven breed categories were also represented, including the traditional powers, sporting, hound, working, and toy, but the crowd favorite was the area's own Delta breed category. Judges stood thoughtfully next to the table filled with ribbons and medals, carefully examining the participants as the pooches streamed by in single file, tongues out and tails wagging.
All right, get them so they look the best for the judges. Judges are facing this way. They can face the audience, either one. The judges are very seriously conferring now.
Winners range from calm and pristine sporting dogs to wild and lovable Delta mixes. There was even a dachshund named Rosebud that opened a trash can for her owner. And then there was Lucy, the lovable hound.
This is Lucy, and she's barking for you.
The winner of the afternoon was a young, white bulldog with a heart of gold named Mr. Stanley. KYUK tried to secure an interview with him, but it seems his newfound canine fame was too overwhelming. Maybe next year when he returns to defend his title of Best in Show. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning Barnes and Mark Earhart in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, and Emily Schwing in Yukon. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Andy Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Rasmussen Foundation, accepting online nominations for the 2012 Distinguished Artist Award until March 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org. ConocoPhillips, the easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.